Ready?
I guess.
I just wanted to pick up on a few things from last time that I got fascinated with when I was reading over the transcript and listening to the tape. One of the first things I wanted to know is if you would tell me something about that little chair.
This little chair?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my wife's family's chair. And I had that, I recovered it. I re-bottomed, put a new bottom in it, but that's not mine.
The little chair?
The little one, right?
You re-caned it?
I re-caned it myself.
Yes,
sir. But her family was used that, all her and her brothers and sisters. And it's pretty well worn out, too. You notice the legs are mighty short on it. It's not mine. I reworked it and refinished it. And had a workshop at Hillsboro and I retained it last year.
Oh, it was hers when she was a child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I noticed it the first time I was here.
Yeah.
I should ask about it. My mother has kept her chair from when she was a child. And it was refinished at one point. And it was very precious to her. I wondered if it might be somebody's chair.
There's a lot of history behind that one. But it's not mine. It was her. I'm sure I had one, but it's long gone now. I haven't had it.
Tell me about, you mentioned that one of your sisters was right across the street.
Yeah.
And she's the one that gave you the list that had all the dates on it.
Yes, I think.
And what was, which sister is that?
That's, Mary, we call her.
Mary.
Mary.
And I had one more detail. And that is, when you worked at the telephone company, what was your job?
I was a pay station repairman and installer at one time, and then a switch room.
Okay.
But the switch room the latter part of the time.
I wanted to know a little bit more about your childhood. You told me the kind of chores you had on the farm. And you mentioned what Sundays were like. I was curious how you managed to go, how did school fit into the life on the farm? Did you do chores before you went to school, for instance, or afterwards? How did it work?
Mostly in the afternoons. The chores, we really didn't do it too much in the morning. In the afternoons, we had specific chores. Each one was assigned. It is, and that included feeding the animals, feeding the chickens, gathering the eggs, and getting them wood,
mm-hmm.
cutting the wood, or chopping or saw the wood, having an ample wood supply, but you know, well, year round actually, because you cook with wood then, you have electric stoves. We had wood ranges in the kitchen, and we used those year-round. And of course, in the wintertime, we used wood for heat. Fireplaces, we had a home place, I think we had, 6 fireplaces.
No! It's a lot of firewood to worry about.
It sure was. Of course, now you didn't have a fire in all of them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You probably had them in 3 of them at the same time. But out of 6 fireplaces, that was your source of heat. It took a lot of wood and took a lot of time to get the wood in and have it ready, you know, when you need it.
Was it timber from your own land that you
cut?
Oh, yes.
Cut your own wood. Mostly hardwood, except some of the pine you cut that for the cook stove because it was It was quicker. Soft wood burned a lot faster and you could get the quicker heat out of it. But in the fireplaces, we used mostly hardwood, the oak and hickory, and then the maple and stuff like that.
Did the school ever close for busy seasons on the farm?
Sometimes it didn't affect us, but sometimes in the fall of the year, it would postpone it maybe a couple of weeks because of the cotton and tobacco, you know. Especially the tobacco farms, but this is not a tobacco area right in here. We raise cotton.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, the land is not suitable for tobacco right in this particular community. And on down the road 5 miles is good tobacco land. But the fall of the year, if it was a late summer, they would delay the school open maybe a couple of weeks in order that the children would have more time to work in getting in the tobacco. But other than that, I don't call any times to postpone.
You mentioned raising cotton as a child. About how long was cotton a major crop in this area?
I would say on up to the Depression years, 30s.
The 30s?
30, 35. And after the Depression, everything improved, you know. Cotton was your cash crop. Until then, I would say 30, 32. Like Mr. Roosevelt got in office, you know. I think we can improve a little bit. Of course, I'm a registered Democrat, but I'm not saying I vote that way. But I think everything can turn around. And when was he elected? 32 for the first term? 33.
Probably 40,
44,
yeah.
You
would have been elected in 32 and
could
take office in
33. Mm-hmm. Economically, things begin to improve. And the cotton was phased out of the cash crop.
Mm-hmm.
The markets being opened up and could sell. That was the thing. On the farm, if you depended on cotton for your cash crop, you know. It's a long time between cotton crops, you know. You sell your cotton in the fall of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't realize much cash for a long, long time. If you had something to supplement your income with, it was fine, but a long dry spell. The same way with tobacco now.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers raising tobacco now. They have a good year. They can extend themselves pretty well, but it's a bad year like I said this year. They're not selling, not bringing as much money, and the crop wasn't as good. It makes a mighty long year.
You mentioned that dairying was a more, and poultry was a more stable income.
Yes, it is.
Week by week.
Well, dairying, especially poultry, was at one time. When I was a young man, poultry was a good source of income. But I don't know what's happening. Mass production got so rule out the family farm. It's almost the same way in the dairy. Dairy is, any time you notice in riding through the country, if you see a prosperous looking place, a farm, you'll always notice it's a dairy herd. It leaves its evidence. But you get a good return for your effort and for your work. You've got some protection. You've got the milk commission that sets prices.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason it's been as successful as it has been. Other type farming is just a hit and miss proposition. You raise it and you at somebody else's mercy. That with tobacco is the same way. They'll pay you what they want to pay you for, not what you need to get. Same way with the egg production and chickens. They'll pay you what they want to, and you've got no recourse. But in the dairy business, you have the milk commission sets the price. Same thing, the merchant association has got a good tight organization. That's the reason they can show a profit. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a merchant association. A lot of merchants are doing stuff. So in a sense, it's the only organized group of farmers. And they survive better than anybody else on account of that.
Are most of the dairy farms in this area still family farms?
They're family owned, yes. It goes back to the third generation.
You mentioned last time you thought it took about three generations.
Three generations.
To make a really successful dairy farm.
We have two in this community, especially. I remember that he's beginning real well. He's passed on to his boys. And they're my age now. They're leaving their work over to their boys. Mm-hmm. So it's a third generation affair. And every one of them has built on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Improved from the last generation. So I think that's the way it should be. I think every generation should improve some in a lot of different ways, especially if they inherit anything. I think you ought to add to it instead of taking away from it.
Yes. Do you think that young people that are raised on farms now, is their life must be quite different from the way yours was?
Oh, yes, sure. They have much, much more than we had when I was growing up. But nobody had anything, so if you never had it, you never missed it. I mean, you didn't feel inferior on account of it, because everybody's in the same boat.
Do you think they work as hard as you did as a child?
No. Because they're so mechanized. They don't have to work as hard. You can do as much in a day now as three offices are doing by hand. Take a tractor and other equipment that goes with it and do so much more than you could with horsepower. I mean, the horsepower, that's a new and horses.
Mm-hmm.
New was it. You couldn't farm without a good mule, you know. Maybe four or five of them.
Mm-hmm.
Considered a big farmer if you had six, three teams, what you call
it. That's a lot of
feeding. That's a lot to feed them. You had to work a lot, make enough feed to feed you out.
Yes, it was part of your farming.
Without the horsepower, you couldn't do anything.
When you were young, did you have time for fun or games?
Oh, yeah. We played a lot of ball. That was our recreation. We worked awful hard to go to the, in the summertime, but to go to the ball game on Saturday afternoon. That was a natural way of life for most of the country boys. We had our baseball games every Saturday afternoon. I used to go 5 or 6 miles riding my bicycle to get to go work like everything in the Saturday morning, get your chores done, your work done, so you go to the baseball game that afternoon. And then that was in the summer. And then in the winter, you hunted. Done a lot of rabbit hunting, bird hunting, and turkey hunting. So that was a good means of recreation.
Mm-hmm.
We thoroughly enjoyed that.
Did that supply help supply the table, or was it strictly?
Well, he wasn't dependent on it. It was just you didn't depend on that for your meat, but it helped out, you know. It gave you a little variety. If you kill a wild turkey, it was right good eating, and same way with the bird, quail, and rabbit, squirrel. What's that?
What about in the evenings?
Done a lot of singing. Found an organ.
Oh, you had an organ?
We had an old organ. And we'd have family sings. And we'd have spelling matches around the fireplace at night. We had ways of entertaining the house. There's a lot more laughter than there is now, I tell you. A lot more. Yes, I think people thoroughly enjoyed themselves in those days, more so than they do now. They didn't have the things to entertain them then that they do now, but you entertained yourself. Or in the summertime, the kids, maybe the neighborhood kids would come in and you'd all play out in the yard together, you know. It'd be a lot of laughs. Hollering and talking and laughing. Well, you entertained ourselves a lot.
Who was it who played the organ?
My mother played the organ. We had a beautiful organ, and I'm sorry to say, but I was responsible for letting it deteriorate. I put it in the building, and roof leaked and just ruined it. It was an upright, had similar to this thing here, and had a nice keyboard and closed. Well, it was a variable instrument. But she played it, and it had pedals on it, you know.
Okay, you had to pump it.
Pump it. I can remember the first I saw one somewhere in an antique shop not long ago. It was a RCA Victrola. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
They have one in the antique mall at Hillsboro. This was an RCA model. That's what we had, and you crank it up, put records on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you were getting a little more modern then.
Yeah.
With my older sisters and brothers. They got big enough, you know, to date, and that was one means of entertaining. They could play a lot of records. So Victrola sounded good. You crack it up on the side and then sit your needle down on the record. And you didn't, no automatic change to it. You played one, you stopped, and you turned it over and played it on the other side. It sounded pretty good.
Look, you mentioned dating. Did young men come to call on your sisters? Is that how it worked? Or?
Oh, yes. Sure did.
Did they go out together, or did they spend time at
Well, mostly at home. They stayed at home and entertained themselves at home. Sometimes, occasionally, they'd go out, but had cars. That was in the, I would say in the 30s, early 30s, I remember. New cars, they had the boys from different places. Now my older sister married a community boy here. Other sister didn't. But I had one sister that married a local boy nearby. Well, not a lot of difference in the courting then. There was some difference in then and now. But basically, it was the same thing.
You mentioned less laughter now. When you look at the young people around you now, what do you see about them that they don't seem to be enjoying themselves as much?
I don't think so. I don't know whether I could really pinpoint it, but I think there's so much to require the time for many things now. That they can turn to, they really miss basic things. And I don't think they have time to really have fun anymore. It's too much else going, too many things to interfere with.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear the laughter in a group of young people now that you used to, or maybe it's me, maybe it's not that much difference. But I don't think it is. I don't think it's... In a way, it's sad, and I reckon it's good that changes do take place.
One of the things you mentioned last time was that you said you thought, as you're saying now, that change happens and some of it's good. But you mentioned you thought it was sad or unfortunate when principles got lost. Can you say some more about that?
Well, you were raised, back when I was coming along, with your principles were valued, and your honesty was valued, and what you said, you was as good as your word, and you told the truth, and now that seems to be kind of loosely used now. You're kind of hardball if you believe in the truth of honesty and character. You show a little character, you be criticized for it. And I think we've lost some of that. I think our values have compromised too much, I think. The truth and the moral values especially. I've just had a terrible episode with the planning department in Hillsborough. It's a shame and disgrace now the way a person's privilege is abused. We call ourselves into freedom. We think we've got freedom. But tomorrow morning, if the planning board in Orange County wants to cut my power off, they can have it done. It wouldn't be a thing I could do about it. And boy, that's not what it should be. We've lost a lot of our freedom, lost a lot of our independence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had an episode with them for the last week, and it's just depressing to see how much of your liberty and freedom you're losing in a legal type manner. They call it legal.
Do people respect other people's private property?
Absolutely. And they respected property lines especially. You can have as big a fuss falling out about a property line as any one thing in the world. And that's caused a lot of friction and a lot of hard feelings by arguing over a property boundary line. And they used to, neighbors would get together and they would establish, they'd have it surveyed with that property line, they wouldn't cut trees on that property line, and that was called a hedgerow. And you respected that man's property line. You wouldn't cut over on him, and he wouldn't cut off on you. There's a mutual respect for one another. But now it's absolutely different. So people, I've had it happen to me in several instances where people just don't respect your property line. They come over on you, or cut trees on your side of the property. And if you cut any on your own land, if your neighbor don't like it, he's liable to have something to say about you cutting your own trees. I know of a case of that right here in this community where a man moved in this community and he was cutting some trees on his land and he didn't like it because he was cutting the trees and he drove nails and spikes and everything in the tree to damage the workmen, you know, when I went to saw it up. Simply because he just didn't like the idea of a man cutting his own, clearing the land, and cutting the trees down. Because I reckon he thought that he should dictate what he should do with them. I don't know. But you never heard of things like that back in my day and time. You established the property line and respected the other man. Property and you just go over on him and follow, and even if it was your relative, you didn't, you respected him. I know I had uncle on each side of him and all our property joined. And we wouldn't dare go across and cut and take anything off in his land, and likewise he wouldn't do it to us. And yet it was still sort of in the family, but we had that respect for one another. But we did enjoy hunting on each other's property. And we all had dogs. We'd consolidate our dogs, you know, get them all. Well, you'd start out hunting, and everybody else's dogs would come to you, and your neighborhood dogs would join in the hunt in your neighborhood too, you see. And you really, and you didn't have to ask, get permission to hunt on his property. He didn't have to ask you to hunt on yours. It was a pretty good mutual feeling there. More so than it is now. You know, there and go out and try to hunt now on another man's property. Well, there's so many people moved out in the country now, it's not in there. Can't use a dog to hunt with because you'll be on somebody else's land in a few minutes. Times like that has changed. Used to have that talking about recreation. Now that was a lot of recreation. For to have a hunt, you know. And everybody seemed to enjoy it. It's just not that much cover, not that much game left, wild game left now. Change. Of course, we're getting a lot of deer in this section we never had before.
Oh, really? Why would that be?
They're migrating this way.
Just away from Chapelville and building.
They caught a bear in Raleigh today.
I know, I heard it on the news. I couldn't believe they caught it on the campus.
They just caught it.
Some last time you mentioned the cooperation with hunting reminded me that you mentioned last time that people helped each other a lot.
Well, that is still, I'm proud to say, in this community. It may not be in other communities. We've got a community now, if you need it, really need some help, this community will stand by one another. I'm talking about if you're in dire need of assistance, your neighbors really come through and here. And of course, that's the way it's always been. Neighbors used to get together and jobs like in the fall of the year, corn shucking. I don't know whether you've ever heard of that.
Yes, I have.
You'd pile up big rows of corn and you'd have a corn shucking. And all your neighbors would come in, and you shuck that corn out in a little while, and it would take one man all the winter to have done it. and swap, what we call swapping work. You'd help him, he'd help you, all around going that way. Same way in the summertime when you thrash your grain, your wheat. And the wheat thrashing machine would come through the community, and everybody would follow it, you know, and go help each other. And everybody's got their own combine, does their own work. I prefer a little swapping work, what we call it now, because everybody's